have tons of juveniles in the penal system that needs to have the same opportunities that I'm having. And the high points for me is that I'm able to tell my story and share the stories of other juvenile lifers that were left behind. Because I still feel when I left in 2017 that I was leaving the only family that I knew for 30-something years. You know, and it gets lonely out here. It gets real lonely. It gets depressing, you know. And if we don't have that support team to help us get through that day, you know, that's when we see the recidivism rate go up. Because I'm telling you, from personal experience, there's been days when I wish I was back.
Well, we need a part two, leaving it there. Luis David Suave Gonzalez, thanks so much for being with us. Subject of the new podcast Suave by Futuro Media and PRX. And thanks so much, Maria Hinojosa, executive producer of Suave and anchor and executive producer of the Peabody Award-winning show Latino USA. That does it for our show. Happy birthday, Julia Thomas. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up, we have Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Good morning, everybody. This is Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio on your community radio station, where we depend upon your support to keep us going. We'll be starting our spring membership drive in just a couple weeks, but you can always support us by going to kboo.fm. There's a donate button. This is listener-supported, listener-sponsored radio. That's how we do it. Been doing it for 53 years now, something like that, 52, anyway. We want to keep going for a while longer. So, lots to talk about as usual. A lot of stuff going on locally that I'd like to talk about, including the shelter to housing continuum proposal that was scheduled for a vote this morning in the city council, but from some concerns raised in neighborhoods near around where I live, out in East Portland, have concerns about it, which we'll talk about as we get into the program. I'm by myself this morning, so I welcome your calls. I will say, for what it's worth, I've only had about 4 hours of sleep, so I will need your support to get through this hour, but I'm sure we'll get into the swing of it real quick. So starting off with some good news on a national level, Deb Holland, the Laguna Pueblo congresswoman from New Mexico, who we've talked about quite a bit on my second Wednesday show with my co-host Jacqueline Keeler, got confirmed to the Secretary of the Interior Department. Yay. First Native American cabinet member ever, and a very important cabinet position for us all, and especially Native Americans. So, of course, the horrible news out of Atlanta, I'm sure, is of great concern to all of you listening. It's a particular concern to this area of East Portland, which is heavily Asian American, and they have suffered incidents of their own. Some broken windows, graffiti, clearly targeted at Asian Americans. As you know, the violence against Asian Americans has been going up since Trump trumpeted this idea of the China flu. And these people who obviously can't tell, well, it's bad enough that they go after anybody, go after a particular community, but a lot of the targets aren't even Chinese American. Not that that would make much difference, but it's just astounding, the ignorance and prejudice that lurks so deeply in our culture. So I don't know if there's anything planned in terms of support. I know there's been some action out here in East Portland. If there's any plans for support, I'd be interested in hearing that. I hope something happens to give a signal that Asian Americans in Portland are supported by the community at large. Our former Thursday talk show host, Joanne Hardesty, has been a lot in the news, some of which she's has at best ambiguous feelings about, I imagine. First of all, she's gotten a conflict with the city auditor, Mary Hull Caballero, over the Independent Police Review Board, which is an issue that she talked about for years and pushed forward the debate, pushed the envelope on the questions of police reform and oversight. And then, suddenly, the head of the Portland Police Union resigned over the bizarre and disturbing episode, which I believe also occurred out here in East Portland, where the victim of a hit-and-run misidentified Joanne as the driver. And I should have looked into this a little more deeply, but apparently that got taken up by some elements within the police department, such that it could have been taken care of swiftly, these rumors. But that's my understanding. And some unspecified singular big mistake, which I'm sure is going to come out, and I see that Ted Wheeler has called for a complete investigation of the incident. But apparently he did or didn't do something, the former police union president, that made him resign. And now we're back with Daryl Turner for a while until they get someone new. So, 503-231-8187. Look forward to talking with you. Look forward to hearing people who don't ordinarily call in. Be really interested to hear people from the Asian American community to talk, hear what their concerns. I'd be very interested to hear people who, from that houseless community, from housing advocates, talking about this shelter to housing continuum. So the easiest way to get across quickly what that's all about, if you're not familiar, I'm going to read from a Portland Mercury article of a couple days ago about this subject, called Concerns from East Portland Delay Council Vote on Homeless Shelter Permitting. Portland City Council is delaying a vote to expand where homeless shelters can be built in Portland after receiving pushback from East Portland residents. The proposed Shelter to Housing Continuum proposal, with the catchy acronym S2HC, is meant to replace what's become a yearly renewal of the city's housing state of emergency. The declaration, first made by former Mayor Charlie Hales in October 2015, expedites the city's standard process for permitting new homeless shelters and waives zoning code rules that limit where they can be built. The Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has proposed codifying those temporary fixes to the still-present housing emergency with the S2HC. Again, that's the Shelter to Housing Continuum proposal, which suggests that City Council update city code language to allow for temporary shelters to exist in all city zones for up to 180 days and allows for public agencies or nonprofits to build permanent indoor and outdoor shelters on lots previously off limits to these facilities without a special permit. It also expands the capacity of large indoor shelters, as well as the formal permitting process for those interested in building tiny home villages and other non-traditional shelters, and makes it legal for people to reside in RVs that are parked on residential properties. I see those as all things that can help with the fact that there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people living in tents and tarps and other makeshift shelters. I see them all the time, all along the I-205 corridor. I mean, just all over the city. Well, some neighborhoods don't have so many. Down here in East Portland, it is a serious situation. Okay, continuing with the Portland Mercury article, in analyzing this proposed code change, city staff identified the vast number of properties across the city where shelters could potentially be built under the new policy. A heat map created by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability shows that if the proposal is approved, there are at least 100 lots that could be turned into shelters in most Portland neighborhoods. This is where some housed Portlanders have raised concerns. An accompanying map shows that there are far more spaces to potentially build a homeless shelter in East Portland under this code change than the central city. According to several City Hall staff, City Commissioners' email inboxes have been brimming with messages this week from East Portlanders who oppose the S2HC. The main concern is that they'll have to live near a higher number of homeless shelters than people on the city's west side. East Portland neighborhood groups have also publicly expressed their opposition to the code change. Last Thursday, Hazelwood Neighborhood Association shared a statement on its Facebook page in which it argued that all Portland neighborhoods should be equally responsible for living near homeless shelters. Quote, the brunt of solving this problem should not fall on the marginalized communities in East Portland, the Post reads. It also talks about a Lentz Neighborhood Association meeting in February where several members said it was unfair to bring the burden, quote, burden, of homeless shelters to undeserved East Portland neighborhoods. So, again, the Portland Sustainability Commission has been talking about this, and after in a presentation, PSC Commissioner Katie Larsell questioned what would keep East Portland, which she said struggles with a reputation from becoming a place where all shelters are put, and it goes on. Well, let me just continue a little further on. Up until 5 years ago, Jolin said all of Portland's adult shelter facilities, that's Mark Jolin, director of the Joint Office of Homeless Services of Portland, most adult shelter facilities were located in downtown Portland. As his department has observed an uptick in homeless encampments in the city's east side, they built several new shelters to serve those growing communities. So it's a complex situation. The reality is there are a lot more existing homeless camps in the area where they're proposed for these shelters. So I guess it kind of makes sense that they should be served by people nearby, like solutions nearby, whether, again, tiny house villages, homeless shelters, RVs, other kind of creative solutions. On the other hand, one can understand concerns that this, you know, all neighborhoods should bear this more equally. And of course, this tends to be a middle to low to middle income area. And so why can't the wealthier areas pick up their share of the burden, either through taxation or, you know, that could actually buy more permanent housing, permanent facilities, or, you know, again, having some camps in there. But, you know, the problem is, where are the services? And one of the reasons there's concerns is there aren't the kind of services that had developed in downtown Portland for the older, not in people's age, but in time here in Portland, the older center of the houseless population, which used to be in downtown, so a lot of the services developed around there, which is always a subject of conversation when discussing where to site these. And of course, you all probably know where my political perspective lies, which is that this is a problem created by a vicious capitalist system which doesn't care about us and will speculate in the rental market and shoot up the prices for rental properties and owned properties so that people can make a huge profit and squeeze people out of the market. So that's one more factor why there's more houseless people. So anything like the present thing, which seems to go some way towards breaking up this monolithic idea of market housing or what? What are the solutions other than market housing? Affordable housing has been attempted, but again, it falls to a lot of the same market forces, unfortunately. So I guess I'll leave it there for now. There's a couple other things I could read from. I'd like to hear what you have to say, especially if you are directly concerned, either through your own experience with houselessness, through working as an advocate, being a concerned neighborhood resident, any of those categories, or just someone concerned about the issue who has something to say. 503-231-8187. So this is from KOIN, another article about this. Council delays vote on homeless shelter expansion plan. A second hearing on the proposal is added after concerns grow that too many new shelters will be sited in East Portland. The city council has scheduled an additional hearing on the controversial proposal to allow more homeless shelters, including sanctioned campsites in most of Portland. The first hearing on the shelter to housing continuum project is scheduled for today, March 17, as originally planned, but largely because of concerns that a disproportionate number of new shelters could be sited in East Portland, the council has now scheduled another hearing on March 24th, when the final vote was set to take place. That is now tentatively scheduled for March 31st. So if you hadn't had your chance to weigh in, apparently a lot of people are emailing the city council. You can certainly do that. I'm sure you can call there. You can also schedule to give testimony. Today might be difficult, but there'll be another hearing March 24th. You can go to the Portland City Council website. There's actually at portland.gov. There's a whole description of the Sheltered Housing S2HC project on their website. That's www.portland.gov/BPS/S2HC to learn all about it. But as you can tell from reading these articles, it's all over the local media, this discussion. I actually caught it on the news the other night, which perked my interest. So what do you think about that? I'd like to hear what your concerns are about that or any of the other subjects I brought up. There was a whole other issue that I was originally thinking of taking on, but I'd like to get a guest to talk about that, which has to do with the whole issues of the internet, computers, artificial intelligence. I heard a program on BBC called Deep Fakes, this ability to manipulate at an ever more sophisticated level the people's videos and audio to basically recreate. You can just make someone say something that they didn't say, and the dangers of that. Also, a new book by Kevin Roos, a tech writer for the New York Times, Future Proof: 9 Rules for Humans in an Age of Automation. the whole issue of automation, computers and automation. And another article by Ben Tarnoff in The Guardian, to decarbonize, we must decomputerize, why we need a Luddite revolution. I've started thinking about this a lot because we're all having to go more towards the use of computers because of COVID. And it's opening up whole new areas of expansion and exploration of computer and online use, because people are seeing the convenience of it. There's, you know, advantages within the way we live within a capitalized technological society. And, you know, it's realistically, it helps people do things that we're used to doing in person and haven't been able to. If I were a conspiracy theorist, this would be my version of the COVID-19 is a biological weapon. It's a conspiracy by the technosphere to increase its dominion. But I don't really think that. So don't worry, I haven't gone off the deep end. But it's kind of eerie how that's going. And I'd like to, it looks like we got a couple callers, so we'll see where people want to go with this discussion. Those are the things I've thrown out on the table. So let's hear what Arthur has to say about them. Hi, Arthur.
Hey, good morning. I've got an idea on how to quickly get people out of, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I've got an idea on how to quickly get people out of tents. You know, all that land that ODOT owns, Oregon Department of Transportation, they own property all over the city.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is get a used school bus, park it there. You can park multiple school buses there. And then just have the person move from the tent, like I used to, into a bus, which is like 10 magnitudes more comfortable, way more comfortable. And then they can customize that bus any way they see fit with the help of the city. But that land, ODOT properties all over the city,
mm-hmm.
usually next to highways. And I think that's a quick, practical solution versus talking for days on end about building shelters. So anyway, I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. I think adding that to the mix, you know, this is a shelter to housing continuum proposal. So it opens up the conversation in a way that I think is really very fruitful. It offers a range of options, and so it opens up to suggestions like that. Certainly ODOT land, if it's available, it certainly, since the city owns it, or no, it's the state owns it, since it's a government owned, it makes it easy in some ways, easier than private property. It's a sort of internal government bureaucratic decision making. Buses, we've all seen those amazingly refurbished buses that people use to live in. I think of train cars have been used creatively. There's a lot of RVs just sitting around, either broken down or not in the greatest condition, that could be reconditioned. But, you know, now we're talking about, you know, really, this is the kind of thing that perhaps the Green New Deal would go away towards working on, towards the Climate Conservation Corps or whatever that Biden has created, to get a lot of people, to get all these mechanics, carpenters, metal workers, skilled craftspeople or unskilled people. You could have on-the-job training for all these people, and then you'd be putting people who, you know, a lot of the houseless people have a lot of skills that unfortunately they're not being able to use and probably getting rusty and, you know, maybe to other problems of their own that are making it more difficult. You know, you get into this downward spiral because, you know, I imagine living on the streets isn't easy. There's some people maybe more cut out for it than others, but I think in general it takes a great toll in terms of trauma, stress, just living in the elements. So, yeah, I think those are all good discussions. I think we need a really comprehensive strategy. We need the community to come together. We need sort of visionary. And I think this continuum idea is something kind of visionary. But we got another caller, Kelly. Go ahead. What do you got to say?
Well, hello. I appreciate you bringing up all these topics. I don't know if my connection's good. This phone is not working really that
Perfect.
Great.
Perfect.
Nice. So I was looking at the Atlanta, you know, Asian, I don't even know what to call it because I want to be sensitive. And I've already been at work this morning and it got brought up as a topic and heard about it last night. I'm glad you brought it up. But to a coworker, hey, can we be sensitive about it? We have multicultural, everybody, ethnicity in our building. And I appreciated that my coworker was able to keep up with the news, but I said, hey, you know, it's not like, I don't know, we're not always at work face to face. My job is, so it's challenging to even come together right now. But I guess I feel like sometimes I will use my I statements. I will talk about things as if it's a, instead of going, oh wow, there's other people around me in line at the store, or, you know, I don't know, that's the opportunity to talk about it in a way to include everybody. I don't know, it's very challenging. And I'm just thinking of how to support our neighbors of many cultures that are American, you know. So I'm glad you brought it up. I can't believe that we talk about so much stuff at work. And then I don't know what you have to say about that. How can we support each other, or, you know, support the conversation?
That's a good question. I know, you know, just sort of public demonstrations of support. I think, you know, GoFundMes for those, you know, businesses that were hit. I'm sure that happened. So I haven't actually, I don't have that at the tip of my finger here. I don't have it linked on my program page, but that, you know, financial support, just sort of, you know, maybe, I don't know, going by and support, you know, supporting those businesses that are still open, I think is probably a really good way. These are just off the top of my head. Those are concrete ways of supporting. In terms of actually protecting people from, you know, it's scary. You know, it's like when something like that happens, you can, you know, you hate to think of it, but you can imagine, you know, what would you feel like if something like that happened in your town? It's just, it's horrific.
Exactly. And so, and one thing they did talk about, you reminded me, on Democracy Now, someone was being interviewed and said more police support, in fact, encourages more instances. You know, it somehow, you know, the colonial systemic, you know, I don't know, policing of things and people.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure there's mixed views of that within, you know, I imagine within the Asian American community. You know, if they're sensitive Asian American officers, I don't know, there probably aren't too many in the Portland police force. You know, that's,
but they're not
one
saying like the police are doing it. They're not saying the police are doing it, but the part of the community that wants to inflict harm, that emboldens people. When, you know, like at the Capitol, they're saying like, oh, more policing encourages and incites maybe nationalism. I'm trying to use my new ideology terms. I learned this term at PCC.
That's an interesting. I hadn't thought of that. That's a complication I hadn't imagined.
It's deep theory stuff, but it's also actual bid to support communities that need support that are getting attacked on a racial or ethnicity, cultural.
Well, you know, one thing, you know, both the Black Panthers and the American Indian movement started as neighborhood protection, well, from police, but one can imagine it could be expanded. You know, I don't know. I guess there could be difficulties with that. I don't know. You know, I'm not Asian American. Mm-hmm. I can't say, you know, no. really suggest anything. But it's, you know, solutions probably have to come from in there. That's why I was interested to hear, you know, if there are any people from that community want to contribute to the conversation. But yeah, I appreciate you brought up a lot of good stuff. I think definitely having conversations. And the other thing you brought up is the isolation sort of mm-hmm. could possibly feed into that, because we don't actually, you know, encounter each other and sort of talk this stuff through as much as we once could. But I suppose we can do that online as well as anywhere else.
Yes, and wherever else, for sure, for sure.
Well, thank you for bringing up a lot of stimulating points, important points.
Well, thanks for letting me practice. I'll try and wait till the end of next term to call in again.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly. And Arthur, before that, who brought up the idea of ODOT property and putting specifically buses, but, you know, why stop with buses? Obviously, the tiny house proposal is also, you know, very... I mean, obviously, you know, one has to think of the cost effectiveness of all these solutions, these, you know, temporary or permanent. What I'm interested in is really developing this, quote, tiny house village, the do-it-yourself. The problem is, you know, property is so expensive, so it's prohibitive for so many of us to purchase a house, or even a plot of land to build whatever structure on, tiny house or otherwise. So that's, you know, one contradiction that's preventing us from moving forward. So, you know, breaking up sort of the monopoly of private property, I think, you know, I like to sort of push the boundaries of the debate, because I think we don't necessarily tend to do that as much as we could. We sort of work within the existing framework, so I think we need to question at a deep level. I think the idea of do-it-yourself, that's always been a hardcore ethic of mine as a anti-authoritarian, tendentially anarchist person, the idea of self-management. So these tiny home villages like I forgot the one over there in North Portland. Anyway, there's Dignity Village, there's Right to Dream, there's, is it Hazelwood Village? I'd like to see them developed even further so that you actually have, you know, I'm an eco-freak, you know, so composting toilets. We need to challenge the codes on multiple fronts. We need to make it so that they can be self-sustaining. You know, we need, especially places where it's easy to hook up water. Yeah, we could, you know, even hook up to the water main and add in a water line to some of these places. Why not? It's much cheaper than building these big high-rise apartment buildings, but, you know, there's all these high-rise apartment buildings with, 40, 50, 60% occupancy, some of them, that are going underutilized. Why not declare eminent domain and take over? I don't know. Maybe it's my 4 hours sleep showing, but I really think, you know, these are somewhat difficult and possibly desperate times on multiple levels. We need to really break free from the stultifying effects of the system as it's constituted by private property and the power of corporate elites and billionaires and the politicians that are in their pockets in general, and an extractivist fossil fuel based economy. You know, we can have these small scale solar, develop that in addition these ideas of micro hydropower within water lines and sewer lines. It's a whole new generation of wind turbines that rotate horizontally. It's a kind of like a almost like a nautilus shaped thing, rather than the older blades that I hear are very, very promising and don't make nearly as much noise. So many opportunities. You know, the people can do collective composting and have their own gardens where they feed themselves from. There's a lot of arable land that could be, partially a dignified small home village and partly a community garden. So many possibilities if we just break out. And I think there's a lot of people who are doing that at a lot of different levels. I think Portland has a lot of potential for moving forward in those ways. I think there's within the city government, there are a lot of enlightened people who are taking these things seriously. I think Portland is and Oregon have been leaders in a lot of ways, and really this is our chance to shine, folks. So give me your ideas, 503-231-8187. We've got a couple callers right off the bat. I'd love to hear what you have to say, especially people who don't call in on a regular basis. I've been talking about the vicious attacks in Atlanta, apparently directed, seemingly clearly directed at Asian Americans. The attacks on Asian American businesses here in the Jade District of East Portland, and some ridiculous. I know the Monta Vila Community Acupuncture Center got a window broken, which some people thought it was, acupuncture is associated with Chinese people. I guess it does originate in China many thousands of years ago. If it doesn't happen to be run by Asian Americans, that particular facility, it could have been. But I don't know if that was why it had its window broken a month or two ago. But anyway, those are some of the things I've got on my mind. I mentioned Deb Haaland, the Native American congresswoman from New Mexico who got confirmed to the Interior Department. I talked about KBOO's former talk show host, Joanne Hardesty, has been in the news a lot and strangely had something to do with the sudden resignation of the head of the Portland Police Union, the Police Association, because he apparently did or didn't do something that may have furthered the rumors. Maybe going a little out on a limb, it hasn't come out exactly what it was. Rumors that Joanne Hardesty had been involved in a hit and run accident. It turned out could have been squelched right away that she had been misidentified by the victim of that accident. Yeah, Joanne sure been shaking things up at the Portland City Council. Great to see. I'm sure she could use a little less drama and more action. But hey, when you stand up on your principles, you tend to make things happen in a lot of different ways. So go Joanne. I don't always agree with all of her policy suggestions, all her political positions, but she's definitely a strong woman, a strong black woman, and a voice we need in our city council. But I'm just going on and on. It's about halfway through the show, I think. 503-231. It's already 8:38. Goodness, time flies. 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in. Please give me a call. Shut me up. Let me hear what you've got to say. I was mostly talking about the shelter to housing continuum, which is a very interesting proposal from out of the Portland government. And let's see, I could read specifically from the Portland. Let's see, let's look up frequently asked questions. That's always interesting. Why is this project happening so fast? BPS was directed by City Council on February 19, 2019 to undertake this work through ordinance number blah, 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 which extended the city's state of housing emergency to April 4, 2021. This project changes city codes to provide most of the same opportunities that the housing emergency provided, but on a more permanent basis. That is, expediting the building of homeless shelters, and now they're including these tiny home villages on either private or city land. So why don't some of these speculative landowners who are sitting on vacant lots, why don't they give it up? Give it up to the common good. Let's go, people. You know, why don't the these neighborhood associations, which have legitimate concerns, why don't they pressure private landowners to give up some of their land, wherever it might be? And again, so the problem of services that I talked about earlier, that they're located so centrally in downtown Portland, well, we're going to need to expand services. So how about, you know, obviously the issue of insurance, medical care is a big part of it. We're going to need to open up some of these Zoom care facilities so that people can just walk in and get the help they need. So that would be one service. Why don't we decentralize some of these services? We're going to need to, you know, they don't need to be all downtown. And, you know, I'm just shooting off here just off the top of my head. But if that's a big part of the problem, obviously, you know, we've got these experimental street response teams now going around in the Lent neighborhood. That needs to get up and geared up so we have more social workers directly helping social workers, nurses, doctors, being able to go around. And eventually, you know, when we get these facilities started, whether it's in East Portland or elsewhere, we need to have a lot of support for them. And so the you know, and I hope I'm able to join in that effort. It looks like we got a couple callers all of a sudden, which is great. So let's just go straight to Darren. Go ahead. You are on the air.
Hey, yeah, I think it's a great idea to use some of these ideas like the composting toilets. They've been doing it in a lot of third world countries, in Mexico City, in the suburbs for years. And I don't know if there's like that could be allotted for certain projects like this, but that would be another great idea. And I don't know about cob structures or what could be, you know, legitimized through codes and whatnot, but I would love to be a part of a project that would be helping to build cob structures, because it's fun for one thing. I've done it before. I've lived off grid. I've also been houseless for a few years in Portland, so I kind of have a unique perspective, and I'm one of the few that made it back, maybe, but it's, yeah, it's a crisis. I mean, there's camps set up on every corner just about, and something needs to be done.
So you're saying, you know, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but you're saying that, like, if there was, like, a city sign-up list for, you know, calling for carpenters, electricians, plumbers to help construct these villages, you might put your name on one of those lists.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not, I don't specialize in anything particularly, but I've helped with a lot of alternative energy projects, and from digging wells to, you know, composting toilets and other things. And I know enough to definitely give some input.
Right on. That's encouraging, and I'm sure.
A lot of the problem also is that a lot of these folks are struggling with addiction issues, and they don't want to move because it threatens their well-being, so to speak. If you look at it from a perspective of not wanting to be sick or out of reach of their, you know, daily routine or whatever, I've talked to a few people that have been offered shelter that wouldn't take it just because of the unsurety of where they were going. So I think that really a lot of focus needs to be put into the rehabilitation and, you know, that aspect as well.
Right on. I'm sure you saw that at first hand, and it's always hard to know what, you know, to what extent, what percentages are involved in that. And I think sometimes people make a little, maybe more of that, and less on the, you know, the specific economics of it. But it's obviously one sees needles around. And we know that it's a problem in the general population. And when you're living on the edge, I imagine it, if you're not already using and there's people around you who are, you might be prone to it. So yeah, obviously we need, as I was talking about that street response team, we need a lot of support structures put in place for sure.
Absolutely. And you know, the project you're talking about would also give people something to do, because that was a lot of it for me, is I really didn't have any purpose. It was kind of hard to just figure out what to do other than digging through garbage, looking for cans and whatnot. So if it gave some people, you know, a purpose, I think that would help immensely with, you know, changing their whole lifestyle.
One can only imagine. We all know that when our sense of purpose flags, the whole rest of our lives are a lot more difficult. That's just a totally human thing. And when you feel kind of helpless and out of control, and you retreat to your, you know, either your room or, you know, your tent, like you're saying, people, you know, that's what they get to know, and that's where they feel, you know, some sense of maybe control over their surroundings. So if we can translate that to, you know, being part, you know, having building or being part of a construction of a village, I think that's that's great to hear other people resonate with what I'm saying. I'm sure there's a lot of people thinking a lot of these things. Hopefully we can get them into practice.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Darren. Good to hear from you. Looks like we got another caller on stack. And after Laura, you can call up yourself, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I think we probably only have about 10 minutes left. Go ahead, Laura. What have you got to say?
Hi. I am homeless in Portland, and I've been homeless for 4 months, actually. After being displaced from my home, you know, from domestic violence. And I think that we do need to accommodate tents. And I liked the idea about dot property. I think we need to be much more adaptable about all the unused space or spaces opening up in buildings or otherwise, especially since it is a national emergency and pandemic. We need to be a lot more flexible than with that. We need a lot more porta potties, garbage, ability to throw away garbage. I think we focus too much on use. I think the decriminalization of meth and heroin and other, you know, small possession amounts and things, I was a little skeptical at first, but I think it's good. I don't think necessarily being exposed to it means you're going to use it. I've found that people are much more approachable, and I live alongside these people. We form communities and help each other, and really, honestly, their use is a small part of it. You know, we're mostly helping, you know, focus on the whole person. And I think we need an integrative model that, you know, where cities and communities take people in and they become our neighbors. And I think that can work. And that's the last thing I wanted to say. Yeah, people are a lot more human than you think. We need to lose the stigmatization. And if you want to ask me anything, I'm more than willing to answer to you. But those are my thoughts.
No, those are all wonderful thoughts. Integrated approach, calling upon people's resources, skills, using it as a way to train people. As I said at the outset, you mean, I only had a few hours of sleep. My head's starting to go a little foggy at this point. I probably shouldn't share on the air, but there you go.
The filter can relate.
Is off. So what's your situation? Are you in a tent? Are you on a couch? Are you? That's not too personal.
I've tented it. Initially got stranded here because my vehicle fell apart, and that meant tents. I went through the cold snap. I think it was really great when they pulled everyone into motels the best they could during the cold snap. And I really like, you know, when you see needles scattered around and things like that, I also noticed that people from the city show up, but... and they have more of a, well, what can I do for you attitude. And those needles clean themselves right up, you know, when they show up and people, you know, get what they need, you know, rather than a punitive response. I have not noticed that police these people who come in to do the sweeps are really helpful for the community at all. Anything, of course you don't want to leave. Anything that makes you leave your tent or your spot is so destabilizing. It actually causes more harm than good. And you know, you only go as far as you can walk. So you're in a so many block radius. And I think we need more kind of a circular model. You know, when they look at setting up shelters or these different day centers or things, they're so far from where, you know, where the need is. And you know, we need to look at you know, setting up, like, keep in mind that people have a very short radius, and it's the scale is very different for people who are houseless as opposed to, like, you know, cars and buses living in their apartments and things like that. I can tell a lot of people, I think, you know, some people want to be housed, some people want tiny homes, some people are trying to convert those lots, you know, to community gardens and little communities where they can live, or, you know, some people are just packing it, keeping it simple with their, you know, bedroll or whatever. But, you know, whatever you're doing, it's hard work. And, I think we just need to incorporate a lot of different models and, you know, that I know that anytime I get a hand up, or even someone hands me money directly or whatever, I'm using it to try to empower myself and those around me. And there's a lot of mutual aid and trying to help each other out, regardless of people's. I mean, we all got issues. We all got issues and things we're going through and struggling with. And but you know, the work of being out here is the same in a lot of ways too. So.
Right on. Always good to hear from people. Their firsthand personal experience. That's always very, very valuable. So thank you. I appreciate that, Laura. Oh, I guess she went. Well, I could talk the whole idea of mutual aid. Obviously, there's been a burgeoning of mutual aid in relation to both the economic natural disasters, economic crises, and COVID, which is also its own economic crisis. And I just wanted to flag one thing that I've come across, which I kind of like. It's the Ground Score Association. which does some litter collection, but also has sort of been involved some in helping people clean up their camps, because I know that's one of the big issues, a lot of the trash, you know, around some of these encampments, tent encampments, tarp encampments. And I know there's a fear of the sweeps and those people who come around in those trucks to clean up. I don't know exactly how that all works. I know in the past there's just been massive throwing away of people's stuff. So I think the whole idea of collecting it, you know, maybe having a warehouse to store people's stuff on a temporary basis, recycling stuff, having volunteers help people clean up. Anyway, all those are some good ideas, but we got Phil, if he's still there, patiently waiting. Are you still there, Phil?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. What do you got to say?
I want to talk about transient housing. I think that what we should see, first of all, to uplift the situation for anyone in a transient situation, is hostels, and progress downward from that to situations where maybe people need more care or whatnot. But a hostel typically includes a kitchen. People can put things in a refrigerator. You can buy meals. My best experience was in Dublin, and it was a converted monastery, and you have to behave. You have to be a respectable person before you can be there. There's supervision at the desk, which isn't the police type situation I saw at Hansen Center. That was a homeless place where the guy handling the desk had a lot of power over those people and abused it. But people, I think, want to aspire to something better, and we should reach out to people who are having transient travel needs. A person flying into Portland at PDX should be able to go to the hostel at Gateway Transit Center and clean up if he doesn't want to get a hotel room. And let everyone aspire to be more like that traveler.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I think I'm not sure that gets exactly at the idea of hostels is a good thing. I tend to think of that, for travelers. We're talking about, you know, people who live mostly, you know, who live in the area and who've, you know, lost their job or their place to live or been destabilized in some other way. So the whole idea of having kitchens, I think I hadn't mentioned that. That's a really important piece to the puzzle. So if we're creating these villages, like Hazelnut Grove is the name of that tiny house village. They've got their own kitchen. You need to it's its own whole support structure. A village needs all the different components. So people being able to cook for themselves is really important. Are you still there?
Yeah, I am. Think that I a lot about Gateway Transit Center because I own a home in the area, and I, you know, with self-interest want to protect the value of that, and I find the city very unwilling to hear what I had to say. I think that it's proper that East Portland should share with Northwest Portland, but with some developed facilities focused to the task. I think the city has done nothing to provide bathrooms and other things to give dignity to the people who are forced to live in that area.
So is your main problem with property values?
No. There's self-interest that guides me, but I'm looking out for the welfare of anybody who's in that situation of being houseless. And uh-huh. I think that East Portland can do its share, but let it not be people just in desperation in tents. Let it be something managed that people have to qualify and behave in.
Well, I mean, the whole issue of behavior, I think that's an important question. I guess it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. Is the behaviors that one's concerned about, are they due to the people's situation, or are they, I hope you're not saying that it's like characterological characterological flaws that are at issue here, because I think that's a I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I think that's a common perception that maybe people have of houseless folks as sort of I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the problem is trying to put too high a bar on things that you actually maybe preclude the people you're trying to include. So anyway,
I think the key thing there is drug use, and that I believe that where people could camp north of Gateway Transit Center in that sort of vacant area that's now very well controlled, people who went in there on bicycles selling drugs were tolerated by the police. It was really ghastly.
No, I hear you. It's a nasty situation all around. So I don't know. We have to leave now, unfortunately, because we're totally out of time. I would have liked to ask you specifically about this shelter housing continuum proposal, which was sort of the main subject. But we have to let that go and let you go and everybody else and myself as well. Thank you all for listening. This is Paul Rowland, Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy